Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and you can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. I'm delighted now to welcome Sheriff Greg Solano of Santa Fe County. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
It's wonderful to have you. There has been, as we saw in last Sunday's paper, a lot more burglary here in Santa Fe County. My neighbor and a close friend of mine were hit within one day of each other. A lot of other people have been hit. What's going on?
Well, there's a combination of factors, and the biggest increase in burglaries is in the city of Santa Fe, which, you know, the city police have jurisdiction over. The county has jurisdiction over everything outside the incorporated. And Santa Fe County has an 11% increase over the last quarter as compared to 2008. The city, unfortunately, though, is right now at about 105% increase for the last quarter. So the largest increase we're seeing is in the more metropolitan area of Santa Fe. Well, the urban areas are still an increase, but not as much. A lot of it really is based on the recession, though. About 8 months ago, I did a blog entry. I have a blog, and on my blog, I described that we were seeing this across the country, a trend of property crimes, which are auto burglaries, home burglaries, residential burglaries, and larcenies from stores. We were already seeing it across the nation, a huge increase due to what was believed at the time to be the recession and the economy. And I talked about in my blog about 8 months ago that it probably would only be a matter of time before it happened here. So we kind of saw it coming, and we've been working very diligently on preparing for it. We have a joint city-county burglary task force made up of city police officers, sheriff's deputies, state police, and even probation and parole officers, and working together to target burglaries even before we saw this huge increase, because we were kind of preparing for it. But nonetheless, it still has hit us.
When you look at who's doing it, do you have any sense? I mean, there are all different kinds of burglars. There's kids. There are professional burglars who got out of jail recently. There's gang members. There's all sorts of... Do you have a sense of who these folks are? Are you catching any of them?
And there's a huge mix, and we are catching them. One of the things that I saw, like in Sunday's New Mexican, the reporter from the New Mexican, Jason Auslander, he was interviewing a victim who had just had their house being burglarized, and he talks about it in the story. And as he was there interviewing her over a burglary, one of our deputies, our detectives, showed up with her property. We had recovered her property, and we caught a teenager who had been breaking into homes, and we caught him with her Mac laptop and a few other things. So we are catching them, but they're ever growing. And for every one we catch, it seems like another one pops out of the gopher hole type thing. So
when it's juveniles, juveniles means what? People under 18?
Yeah, a juvenile is anyone under 18. An adult's anyone over 18. The juvenile burglars are much more related, usually either to gang affiliation, to where they're doing it as part of a gang, and they're using it to get money either for drugs or other things. And the other thing that juveniles are doing it for is for the adrenaline rush. We recently caught a 15-year-old a few months ago who had committed about 30 burglaries in 2 weeks, and that's just what he admitted to. And what we found is, you know, he came from a decent home. His family was middle income, making money. So it wasn't a matter of low income, and it wasn't a matter of gangs. He was doing it for the adrenaline rush. He did it once, got away with it, and just continued to do it, and continued to commit burglaries because he confessed to us that it was an adrenaline rush and that he thought it was fun.
What happens to kids like that? I mean, do you get him into a bungee jumping program? I mean, how do you get him out of burglary and into something more productive?
And that's the job of the juvenile probation office. The juvenile probation office is a section under CYFD, Children, Youth, and Families. And they don't have really a one-size-fits-all for kids. They really try to assess each kid individually. And to be honest with you, there's some kids that are beyond saving that just have to go to jail for long term. But most of them, they try to figure out why they're doing it and look at counseling, look at programs. Some of them have dropped out of school and they have a lot of idle time on their hands, so they end up getting in trouble. So they try to get them into a school program that fits them. You know, maybe not the standard curriculum like at Santa Fe High or Capital High, but something like the Sur Academy, where the curriculum's a little more adjusted to trying to keep kids in school and get them to graduate. So there are a lot of programs, but it's kind of not one size fits all. Some of them, it's Boys and Girls Club.
Do they address this question of the adrenaline rush? I mean, some people are just wired that way, and those who don't turn to crime often really do turn to, like, skydiving.
That's true. And that's part of the counseling, I think, that they do, is they do have counselors that they go see, and the counselors try to encourage the kids to get into other programs or other activities that will still keep them excited and amused and out of trouble.
Now, the things you've talked about so far, adrenaline rush and gang activity, those aren't related to the recession.
No, and that brings us to what most adult burglars are. Most adult burglars do it for two reasons, and it's either drugs or just to earn money. So we have this certain sector that they do burglaries just to buy their next fix of drugs. And that has been the most common type of burglar that Santa Fe has seen in years past. And those are the types of burglars that usually stay close to their own neighborhood, break into a house nearby, take a few small things that they can run away with, and go trade or sell for drugs. And for many, many years, that was the primary burglar that we saw. Now, in the last couple of years, we've seen a dramatic change from that. While we still have those, we're starting to see people doing it just to support their lifestyle, just to support their families or to pay the bills. And those,
so it becomes a job.
It does. It becomes a job to them. And they are very prolific at their job. When we catch a burglar, like if we catch a burglar who's been hitting, say, the Alafria area, and we put that person in jail, you will see a dramatic decrease in burglaries in that area for the next few months.
Just that one person?
Just one person. Because one person will commit four or five burglaries a day. And you take that over even 4 or 5 days a week, and you can see that in no time at all, in a month, somebody can be doing 100 burglaries. And it's very common that they'll do that. So it's when we do catch a burglar, you'll see a dramatic decrease in that area that they hit.
How do you go about catching the burglars?
And that's the interesting thing. A lot of people think that like more patrols will do it or more officers on the streets. And I agree that more officers on the streets would help. But the truth of the matter is, the way we catch burglars is by tips from the public. The chance of one of our deputies or one of the officers just driving up by patrolling on somebody doing a burglary is minimal. And especially in the city, the house is a little more clustered. But in the county,
yeah,
most homes are like 1 to 2 acres apart.
Right.
So, you know, the chance on a deputy driving a dirt road in the county and catching somebody doing a burglary is minimal. We do sometimes catch them, like when we do a traffic stop, somebody runs a red light or a stop sign, we pull them over and their backseat's full of things. That happens. But the way we catch most burglars is crime tips. And that's why we really need the public to help us stop burglary in Santa Fe. You know, if you notice somebody who's suspicious in your neighborhood or somebody doesn't belong, give us a call. We'll go check it out. And we'd rather get 50 calls that turn out to be nothing than no calls, because that's how we catch them.
So somebody, what does that look like? For example, the other day I was leaving to, you know, going out of my driveway in the afternoon, and there was a young man on a bicycle riding back and forth with a cell phone. And he asked me which way Agua Fria was, which he had to have known since he had to, yeah. And then I watched him for a while, and he just was circling. Is that suspicious behavior? I didn't recognize the kid from the neighborhood, but I don't know all the kids in the neighborhood.
Sure, and you know what? If we drive up on him and we question him and everything's legitimate, you know, what's the harm? Maybe we stopped him for a minute or two and talked to him and we let him go. But if it turns out that they are doing burglaries in the area, even if we can't prove it that day, a lot of times what happens is because we've stopped them and questioned them there, they'll move on because they know somebody's calling. The most common way that burglars hit people's houses now is residential burglaries are done during the day because the burglars assume people are at work. And commercial burglaries are done at night when the businesses are closed. So what they'll do is they'll go to your door and they'll knock on your door. And if you don't answer, then they'll break in. If you do answer the door, then they'll usually come up with an excuse like they'll give a name. I'm looking for Joe Madrid or something. And you say, well, nobody lives here. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm at the wrong house. And they'll head out. Another thing they'll often do is they'll knock on the door when you answer. They'll say, oh, you know, I'm looking for work in this area. I do painting. I can paint your house or I can do things. And if you give them a job, well, they'll take the job. If you don't, then that's just their excuse for knocking on your door and they head out. And
now, if you give them the job and they take the job, will they then also rob you?
Many times, yes. Yeah. Many times you'll get comfortable with them. You'll leave the house for a little bit, or they'll get in your shed and steal tools, or they'll steal things from your house if you leave them alone. So that does happen. You really need to be careful when somebody just shows up at your door looking for work.
We're talking to Sheriff Greg Solano.
And you know, if people do show up at your door like this, I always tell people, if you have that little hair on the back of your neck that sticks up and it makes you suspicious, act on it. Call our office. Call the city police or the sheriff's office. And the number's the same for both. Our non-emergency number is 428-3720. And then, of course, if it's an emergency, you call 911. But you can call the same number no matter where you live, and we'll send the appropriate people out. But, you know, a lot of times I've had people that they get broken into and they're like, you know, a couple of days ago, somebody did come and knock on my door like that. And I thought it was suspicious, but I just didn't think to call. And I tell people, you know, if something makes you suspicious, if that little hair on the back of your neck pops up, call it in. If we get there and we find the guy a few houses down and it turns out that he really is looking for work, no
but
harm.
But how do you know? How can you determine that?
Well, we question them and we're pretty good at it. And the other thing is that burglars usually have, especially a professional burglar doing something like that as opposed to kids, they usually have a record. So when we pull them over and we say, you know, what are you doing here? And, oh, I'm looking for work, and that's why I'm just knocking on the house. You know, we get their name, we get their identifying information, we call it in, and we find out that maybe they're wanted. And maybe we can't arrest them that day, but the deputies or officers that go out in the field, they'll tell the detectives, you know, we caught this guy and he's going house to house and we think it's what he's doing. And so then we'll set up special operations to catch that person.
What does the city do? What can the city and county do to prevent gangs and bust existing gangs?
Gangs are really tough. A lot of gang members, especially the younger kids, their parents are actually gang members too, or their uncles or their family. So they grow up in this culture of gangs and find it to be a normal part of their life. You know, I grew up on Hopewell Street in Santa Fe when I was young, and most of the kids I grew up with were in some kind of gangs or illegal activity. Most of them are in prison or dead now, and it was really my mother, a single mother, that kind of got me out of that. You know, she worked real hard, worked two jobs, and got us moved out of that area. But that's where I spent most of my young life. And it's very hard to change the culture of gangs. And law enforcement, once again, just like burglaries, can't do it alone. You know, one of the good things about when we arrest gang members for crimes is it gets them into the system. And if they're young and juveniles, that's the time to try to turn them around. So then it's up to the probation officers and the programs and things like Warehouse 21 and other programs that we have in the city do a good job of turning people around, turning our youth around who are in gangs. But we've got to be able to identify them. And unfortunately, we don't have a lot of, in the sheriff's office, we don't have anybody devoted strictly to gangs. In the city, they do have, I think, two officers. And it's just a matter of economics and how much time everybody can devote to gang membership. But in the larger gang cities like Albuquerque and Los Angeles, there are a lot of nonprofits that have jumped in and filled that gap. And Santa Fe, I think, hasn't reached that point yet where we have some gang intervention that's not law enforcement related or not with the courts. And we're getting to the point where I think where we need that.
Now, you just talked about your wonderful and hardworking mother who got you moved out of that area. Do you think you were in danger of becoming a gang member yourself when you were young?
Yeah, and to be honest with you, you know, like I said, in the area I grew up, everybody was in trouble. I ran away from home when I was 14 years old. And pretty much the only time I ever went home was when I was taken back by the cops. And it's kind of how I ended up being a cop. It's funny because there was a cop back then. His name was Jimmy Salazar, but his nickname was Jimmy Weddle. He was a Hispanic cop, but he looked Anglo, so his nickname was Jimmy Weddle. And he picked me up numerous times when I was a kid. And I had a probation officer, and he was a priest, actually. I don't know of any other priest who's ever been a probation officer in this area. His name was Father Jerry Platowski. And between Father Jerry and the officer, Jimmy Salazar, they turned my life around, really. My mother worked two jobs. She was not home a lot. Of course, and I was not home a lot because I ran away a lot when I was a kid. So between those two, and then I met my wife when I was 16. She kind of turned my life around, too. So it was just, I was lucky. I had this combination of people that came into my life that turned it around for me.
Now, and those two people, Officer Jamie and the priest, they liked you.
I think they did. You know, I really do. I think they did. I think they thought that I was worth saving. And a funny story is, you know, I ended up marrying my wife when I was 20 years old. When I was 21, she got pregnant, and I decided I needed to get a job that had, like, health insurance and benefits because I was working at a car dealership. And so I opened the paper, and I just kind of applied everywhere. And one of the jobs in there, when I applied with the city, I applied for several jobs in the city, and one of them was a police officer. I really never thought I'd get hired. And I passed all the testing, and the last step was an interview with the chief's office. So I went to, and I didn't know who the chief was at the time, but I went to the interview, get upstairs, and the deputy chief was Jimmy Salazar, that cop. And I walked in the door and I saw him, and the first thing I thought was, oh, I'm never getting this job. I mean, he knows me. And he laughed and he said, so you want to join the other side now, huh, Greg? And I just said, yeah, you know, and they gave me a shot. They hired me. And I, you know, I consider myself very lucky because I've had all these turning points in my life where it could have gone different ways, and things just always seem to go well for me. And we need to develop those turning points for other kids. We really do.
I would think that because of what you knew and having been what you might call a bad boy or kind of a bad boy when you were young, that gives you an edge in law enforcement.
It does. I'll never forget, like, my first few years as a law enforcement officer. We were patrolling, like, my old neighborhood, Hopewell Street, and the projects in there. And we would drive up for calls or whatever, and I knew them all. You know, I knew the families, and they would say, Greg, how you doing? And that, and my training officers, they were like, how do you know all these people? You know? But it does come in very handy. I mean, especially when I deal with juveniles. And after I'd been with the police department for 2 years, I went to work for the juvenile division, just strictly dealing, and I was in the first gang unit that Santa Fe ever had. So just dealing strictly with gangs and juveniles. And it really gave me a good perspective when I would deal with the kids. And to this day, I've been out of field work for a long time, but I'll be at the mall and somebody will walk up to me and introduce their wife and their kids, and they'll say, do you remember me? You know, you picked me up when I was a kid, you know, 10 years ago or 15 years ago, because, you know, it's been, when I was in the juvenile division, it was like in 1990 to 1994. And it's a great feeling to meet these kids that have turned their lives around and feel that you've been a part of it.
You must have to walk an interesting fine line between, on the one hand, keeping them off the streets, and on the other hand, trying to give these young people what they need in order to make a proper life for themselves.
That's very true. I mean, we've had some talk lately about reinstituting some kind of time that they have to be in by
curfew.
Thank you. The curfew, and especially after the recent accident, DWI accident involving the 14s, and you know, for one, curfews pretty much have been fought by, like, the ACLU and others, and have been not upheld at all. We haven't been able to keep a curfew going in most cities in New Mexico.
The curfew wouldn't have kept that drunken driver off the street. He would have just killed an adult.
It just may have killed somebody else, yeah. So I don't think that's necessarily the way to go. I like the graduated licensing. I do think it helps. You know, not all kids follow it, but I think it helps. And but we've really got to look at giving these kids alternatives. And a lot of people expect law enforcement to be the be-all and end-all for all these problems. And while crime is a big part of what they do, there's a lot of things that these kids do in gangs that is not directly a crime, but is still bad for them and bad for the future. And I think Santa Fe needs to develop some nonprofits, some gang intervention that's not law enforcement related. And to be honest with you, too, kids are more likely to relate to maybe some people who've gotten out of gangs and start a nonprofit and work with them than they are with cops. It's very, you know, I didn't think Jimmy Weta was my friend when he used to arrest me when he was a cop and he used to pick me up. But, you know, years later I realized all he did for me. But at the time, I didn't relate to him. I didn't think that he was doing that much for me.
We're talking to Sheriff Greg Solano. One hears the most harrowing stories of gang initiations from other cities where, in order to get into the gang, they have to murder somebody or whatever. What are the gang initiations in Santa Fe about?
And it's changed a lot. In the early 90s, when the movie Colors was out, you know, that movie first came out, Colors, people were emulating that, young people. And in those days, in like the LA gangs, you used to have to take a beating from the other gang members in order to join this initiation. And that was pretty much it for a long time. Things have changed from then. That still does happen. It's called being jumped in. But the other thing that we've seen a lot now is you have to break into a home, or you have to go into Allsup's or one of the convenience stores and walk out with a case of beer. You know, they just brazenly walk right in, grab a case of beer or two, and just walk right out with it, you know. And of course, the clerks can't really stop them because you can't put their lives at risk for a case of beer. But those have become the initiations now. Unfortunately, there are a lot of young girls that are involved with gangs. And one of the gang initiations is rape of the young girls.
Oh,
and the girls understand that after a while and they take part in it. And it's amazing that this happens. But those are one of the initiations. So it kind of varies from gang to gang, sometimes it varies from gang member to gang member. The gang will just get together and decide what you're going to do to prove that you're belong part of this gang.
Do you think that the recent spate of burglaries is part of gang initiation, or not so much?
I think there is some. I think there is some. It's hard to gauge exactly how many, because even when we catch gang members that do burglaries, a lot of times they will admit to the burglaries. And this just recently happened, where we know this kid is a 14-year-old kid was doing burglaries. He admitted to 4 burglaries in one day. We know that he's a gang member, but he would admit to the burglaries, but he wouldn't talk about his gang membership at all.
Well, if he does, he's in worse trouble when he gets out than when he was arrested.
That's correct. So it's hard for us to gauge how much of it is gang initiation and not, but we know what's happening. We know because, you know, they'll have the homemade tattoos that show that they're affiliated with a certain gang, or they'll have some other identifying characteristics where we know they're with a gang, and sometimes we'll catch them with another gang member and arrest them both. So we know it's gang related, but it's hard to prove that.
Let's say I'm home. Someone knocks on the door. For whatever reason, I don't answer the door. Then I hear somebody at my window. What do I do?
You need to call 911, and you need to scream out. Let them know you're there. Don't be afraid, and think that you have to just remain quiet, because you'll scare them off. They don't. The burglars, for the most part, they want to get in and out without anybody seeing, without any problems, and that's why they'll go to the easiest houses too. They'll look for houses that are real easy to break into. We can talk about some ways about not making your house one of those houses. But we've had several burglaries recently, two in El Dorado, where somebody knocked on the door and the people didn't answer. One of them, they were in the bath, and that's why they didn't answer. It's understandable. The other one looked out, saw that it was somebody they didn't recognize, and just didn't answer the door. A few seconds later, the burglar kicked down the door and started to enter the house. So, you know, my probably best advice is if somebody comes to the door and they're knocking, you don't recognize them, just tell them, I'm busy, I can't get to the door right now, or something like that, so they know you're there. And then, you know, if it's legitimate, they may yell back. If not, they'll just leave. But let them know you're there.
But if you do that, then they're less likely to get caught, because by the time you call 911 and an officer comes, they're long gone.
That's true, but you'll be safe.
Yeah.
I mean, you'll be safe, because once they're in your house and you confront them, or you try to hide out in your house and they find you, the chance for danger is just much more prolific.
Do they tend to be armed?
No, they really don't, unless if you catch them in the act in your house and they get weapons from you, then they can be. In most cases where they're armed, the weapons are things that they're stealing at the time. They're not usually armed when they make the burglaries, but some are. And that's why the best thing is to avoid any kind of having any kind of confrontation. So if somebody knocks on the door, you don't recognize it, just tell them, you know, yell through the door, I'm busy, I can't answer the door right now, or something like that.
Yeah.
And they'll go away. If it's something legitimate, they might yell back.
Now, I know people, usually extremely strong men who are good fighters, who would really like a confrontation with one of these guys. So let's say my friend is in his house, a 14-year-old comes in. Does he have the right to punch him?
Let me tell you about that, too. And there's two very controversial cases going on in New Mexico right now where somebody has shot a burglar in two different cases. And in both cases, the person who shot the burglar went to court. In one case, they were found guilty and actually sentenced to jail. And then the case received a lot of controversy throughout the state, including Governor Richardson getting involved. And they were brought back into court and let out on probation. In the other case, it's still going through the courts right now. New Mexico law is really clear. You can only use, and your the law that applies to any citizen is the same law that applies to police officers. So police officers have to follow the exact same law. And that is you can only use force against someone when your life or someone else's life is in danger. And it can be your perception of your life being in danger, but you'd have to be able to demonstrate that to the courts. And everyone who especially if you kill someone, is going to end up in court. And a lot of people don't realize this, but every time an officer shoots someone, it goes to court. It goes to a grand jury, and a grand jury hears the case and determines whether or not the shooting was justifiable. So there's a lot of controversy over this person that's being charged now. I think it's in Dona Ana County, but I might be wrong. That's being charged with shooting a burglar also. But the truth of the matter is even cops get charged. Technically, they go to a grand jury and it's heard in a court case. So the basic thing is you have a right to defend yourself, but you must be not the aggressor. The other person must be the aggressor. And then you are allowed to use whatever force is necessary to protect your life or someone else's.
Well, let's say you know, I don't know how to do this, but let's say you know how to, pin them down and tie mm-hmm. them up. Are you allowed to do that?
You are. I don't recommend it. I mean, even if you know how
But you wouldn't go to court for doing that?
No. However, like I said, if there's any injuries whatsoever to the other person, and especially death, you could go to court for it.
Now, let's say, we had a burglary in my neighborhood where somebody came in the dog door. It was a big dog door. They just squeezed right in.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. And what I have now done is I actually put a bar over my dog door so that the little dog can get through, but a human head can't get through it.
Yeah.
And there's probably a number of ways to do that, but, you know, the covers that come on dog doors are so easy to kick in that it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
What are some other ways that people get in and that people can secure their houses?
Let me go through that, and I've got some notes, I'm going to pull those up. But the important thing is to make your home look occupied even when you're not there. And that goes back to the old thing about having a TV or a radio on, having lights that go on at night on a timer when you're not there, motion detector lights, even though that's not necessarily making them look occupied. when people walk into your yard and the lights start coming on, they're going to go somewhere else.
But that's a night thing. What about during the day?
And like I said, during the day, you want to leave a radio or something on, something that makes it sound like somebody might be home. Although if they knock on the door, it may still let them think that you're not there. This sounds real simple, but locking all your doors and windows. I have, and people that grew up here, when I was young, we never locked our doors. In fact, I remember my wife and I had a house at one time that when we sold the house, we didn't have keys to it because we hadn't locked them in so many years. So I had to replace the locks to give the people that we bought the house keys. But nowadays, you do. You just need to lock in your doors is an important thing. Even if you're gone for a short time, even if you're just running down to the mailbox or something, keeping your garage door closed and locked. So many people leave their garage doors open. About 80% of car burglaries, the cars are unlocked. They're just completely unlocked. So people will just walk down your street and check the doors and open them and pull out. Maybe it's just CDs or whatever, iPods, those things, but they're unlocked. And then back on car burglaries too, don't leave items in plain view. People go on up to the trailheads and go, walking the trails or riding their bikes, and they'll leave their purses in the front seat of the car. Churches are getting burglarized a lot right now, and not the church itself, but cars in the parking lot.
Right.
Because women are going to church, leaving their purses on the car seat, and while they're in church, their cars are getting broken into. So all this stuff, lock it in your trunk, take it in your house, lock your car doors, and they'll move on to somewhere else because they usually look in the car windows first. Don't allow the daily deliveries of mail and stuff to pile up. If you're not going to be home, have somebody else pick up your mail or pick up your newspapers. Or you can call the newspaper, like the New Mexican or the Journal, and they'll hold your papers and give them all to you when you get back. A lot of people have the push-button locks on their doors, where you just push the button and close it and walk out. Those will kick open very easily.
Use deadbolts.
You've got to use deadbolts. And a lot of people buy those iron storm doors, but then they don't lock those. And if you put deadbolts on those, they will go on to another house because to get through that door and the next door. And even though people do break windows to get into houses, the most common way is through the doors because breaking the windows can make a lot of noise. And a lot of burglars have been cut doing that, and they don't want to do it anymore.
What about alarms?
Alarm systems are really good for cutting down on the amount of items stolen if you leave it on. And here's the funny thing. We have a bunch of homes broken into that have alarms, but they weren't turned on.
I know.
They're just not turned on at all. But if you do get an alarm system, make sure that it's one that calls in the alarm to an alarm company and they call the police. Or work it out with your neighbors to when they hear an alarm from your house that they call you. A lot of times people have never talked to their neighbors and never given them a phone number to call if their alarm goes off. So the alarm goes off and the neighbors don't want to go check the house because they don't want to confront a burglar. So they just let it go. Give your neighbors the phone number. Tell them call you when your alarm goes off or call the police when the alarm goes off. And we'll go out and check it. But alarms do cut down on the amount of items stolen. So if somebody breaks in your house and the alarm goes off,
They know they've got a couple minutes.
So they may still take things. And a lot of times they don't take anything. But if they do, they'll just grab one or two things that are close to the door, close to the window, and head out. So you will dramatically cut down on the amount of items stolen, if anything stolen at all. So alarms do work in that respect.
And dogs?
Dogs work. Big dogs, unfortunately, I think they do work. Especially if you have like a backyard that abuts like an arroyo or an open field. Burglars love to be able to walk in and out of fields, jump over the fences, break into houses. Fences are great for privacy, but they're perfect for burglars. Because once they're in your yard, if you have a nice coyote fence or a big fence, then they can do whatever they want. Nobody's going to see them. So having a dog in a backyard like that is great also. One of the other things you do is take a look around your house and look at your house from a burglar's perspective and say, okay, if I was a burglar and I wanted to, like, get in my yard and hide out and get in the house, how would I do it? because a lot of people have shrubbery that blocks the view of their house or blocks the view of windows, so that people are able to hide behind shrubbery, break into the house, and never be seen. They have a bunch of cars parked around, or like I said, big fences where your neighbors will never see somebody breaking in anyway. So try to assess and see what you can do to minimize those areas.
Do burglars tend to be watching your house for, you know, minutes or hours to see if you're leaving and sort of case the joint, as they say?
On TV, yeah.
On TV.
In real life, no.
No.
In real life, they if they have a car or they're doing it on foot, they go to the neighborhood that they decide that they're going to do burglaries today. And with the exception of someone who maybe has worked in your house before, knows where you keep the key, or has had access to your house, knows what you have, there's a lot of burglars that are people that have worked in your house or relatives. I mean, some of these kids we've arrested, they're breaking into relatives' houses, you know, because they know what's there and where it is. But for the most part, burglars, it's a random thing. They go into a neighborhood, they look for easy marks, and that's why I talk about not making your house an easy mark. And then they just commit their crime and leave.
I have a friend who had a burglar recently who stole two little, almost worthless digital cameras, a bunch of change, and a Led Zeppelin t-shirt. Mm-hmm. That was it.
Yeah, and that sounds to me like...
And there was jewelry everywhere. There were all sorts of things. There was a computer. There was all sorts of expensive things. They didn't take them.
Yeah, sounds like a kid.
Yeah.
Somebody's just doing it for fun. So they're looking for stuff that they like. You know, they're coming in, they're picking out stuff that interests them, that they like, rather than doing it for money. That sounds like it was probably a kid or a teenager doing that.
Let's say somebody has their computer stolen, or their digital camera, or their jewelry. What happens to that stuff? The people aren't presumably using it. They're fencing it. They're pawning it.
They're either trading it or selling it for drugs or cash. And, you know, one of a lot of that stuff, actually, we catch. Like, when we catch a burglar, they'll have a bedroom full of stuff, and they'll admit that it's stolen. So we take it all, take it into evidence. But because people haven't either given us good descriptions when their homes are broken into of what was stolen, or because the items aren't identifiable very easily, because, you know, you can buy a piece of jewelry at Zales and 50 other women can have the same ring or whatever. So if you don't identify your items in some way that we can find it for you, a lot of that stuff ends up going to auction. And sometimes even goes back to the burglars, because sometimes if the burglars don't admit they stole it, but we know it's stolen, we'll take the items, try to prove it's stolen, and if we can't, we have to give it back to them.
Right.
So it's very important that people identify their items, you know, write down serial numbers, or just run through your house with a camera. Take pictures of everything, and don't just store it on your computer in case your computer gets stolen.
Right.
Put it on a CD-ROM or a floppy disk, for those who still have those, and stick it in a drawer. And that way you can pull those out and say, well, here's pictures of my items that were stolen. Here's what their serial numbers are, things like that. And just engraving, you can go buy a pen at the Home Depot or whatever for like $15 that you can go through and scratch your Social Security, not your Social Security number, sorry. I meant to say, don't use your Social Security number.
I did that once, and then I thought, oh no, I can never sell my CD player because it has my Social Security number.
Yeah, don't use your Social Security number. That's how that popped into my head, was I wanted to say to people, don't use Social Security number.
But what do you use?
Use some kind of identifying number that you think... that you can recognize, something
should
that means
something
to you.
Should you use your name?
And names are fine. A name is fine. A number that means something to you, that you can say, okay, everything I have has this number on it. And you know what I use sometimes is, I have an old address that I used to live at years ago, so nobody would know because it's not where I live now. But I'll put the numerics from that address on it. And so I tell people, you know, this is the number that's on it, and here's what it means to me and why it's there.
Now, that's interesting, because if you put too much identifying markings on it, then they can use it for identity theft.
That's true. And that's why it used to be, and the police actually used to teach this back in the 80s, and like when I first became a cop, they used to teach that put your Social Security number on items. Well, we don't do that anymore. But put some kind of just identifying number or your name on the items, and try to put it in a hidden place. Like when you take computers and that, pop the battery off, and engrave it underneath the battery.
Right.
People never take the battery off, you know. So, and then when we recover these things, if you put in your police report, I had a Mac notebook stolen, and underneath the battery has my name. Well, we actually have a pretty intelligent computer system where we can say, okay, show me all the Mac computers that have been stolen in the last year. And we can print that up, and then we can look and see if any of them had hidden identifiers. And then we go to that notebook that we just recovered and look to see if it's there. So we do that because we go out of our way to try to get these items back to the owners. And a lot of times we're not able to.
Can the owners, for example, a month later, let's say you've had a valuable piece of jewelry stolen that was your mother's and you really want it back. Can you go to the police a month later and say, hey, can I look at your stuff and see if I can find my mom's ring?
Yeah. We don't allow you to go in and just browse through items because then it could easily be said that, that's mine. You know? So, but if you haven't turned in a list of your stolen items, if you didn't report your burglary, and then you find out, because a lot of times we'll publicize when we have a big haul, we publicize it so people will know and call us. So if people call us and they say, okay, here's what was stolen, and give us a list or tell us over the phone what was stolen, then we'll look for you. If there are any items that could be yours, then we'll let you come in and look at just those items. And that's the way we work that out. A lot of people are very successful going to pawn shops on their own and seeing if they see their items, watching Craigslist, you know, do a search on Craigslist, do a search on eBay. And especially for things like bicycles, I've had people that have had very expensive bicycles stolen. They start searching Craigslist and eBay, and they find their own item. And then they call us, and we get it back for them. So,
And I suppose you should engrave your bicycle, too.
Oh, absolutely. Or at least things like bicycles, laptops, computers, they have their own serial numbers that are strictly identifying to them. So even if you just get those serial numbers.
Now, what about Albuquerque? Do things stolen in Santa Fe tend to migrate to other cities, or are people actually pawning them here?
Absolutely, no. They do end up in other cities. We found a computer shop about 6 months ago in Rio Rancho where the guy was buying and selling used computers, and he wasn't trying to run a fence operation, but you know he would publicize that he buys and sells computers. So people were stealing computers here, going there, selling them to him, and he was selling them on eBay. And really, that hair on the back of his neck should have stood up because he should have noticed that the same guy was going back with computers every few weeks or every week or so. So at some point, he knew he should have known he was taking stolen items. And if you buy stolen items, you can be charged with a crime also, and it's a felony. And it's possession of stolen articles. And
if you knowingly...
Well, you could be charged even if you didn't know or should have known. And the reason I bring that up is a lot of times burglars will go door to door or sit out in the parking lot of a grocery store with their trunk open and say, hey, you want to buy a computer? You know, I'm low on money. I need to pay for gas for my family, or I need to buy groceries for my family, and I'm selling my computer. That's, most of the time, those are stolen items. So if you see that, you should call us, and we'll go out and check it out. And if you buy them and later on it turns out to be stolen, number one, you could be charged, but number two, you're going to lose the item.
Nobody's going to reimburse you for whatever you paid for it.
No, so you've got to keep aware of that. But if you really want to stop burglars in Santa Fe, when you see somebody doing that, call us because we'll get down there, and most likely they're stolen. And every time we take a single burglar off the street, it's 30, 40 burglaries within a month that end because one burglar will do that many burglaries.
So the demographics of burglars, would you say that they're mostly young people or not?
They run the gamut. They really are. And it used to be years ago that they were mostly 20 to 30-year-olds who were on drugs. But really, it's changed lately. Now we're having everything from juveniles to those people that are on drugs to even people as old as 40 or 50 years old that are doing it for a living or doing it because of the economic necessities. Because people are doing burglaries now because they don't have jobs. So, and that's why if somebody comes and knocks at your door, like I said earlier, and, you know, acts like they're looking for another house or something like that, just because they don't look like they're a burglar doesn't mean they're not. I mean, a burglar can look like me, like anyone.
Like a nice, well-dressed, well-groomed person.
Yes. Yes.
Anything else that you want to tell the public about safety and restoring Santa Fe to being the relatively safe place that it's been?
You know, if you want to stop burglaries in your neighborhood, one of the best things to do is start a neighborhood watch. And both the city police and us, the sheriff's office, we have neighborhood watch programs. We'll come in and help you get them set up and get them running. And so there's some very effective ones. El Dorado Neighborhood Association has a very effective neighborhood watch, and they're great at doing it. The Tonto Road Association has a great neighborhood watch.
And their burglary rates are lower.
And we catch more burglars in those areas.
Right.
The other thing I want to remind everyone to do is we have a program, and it's been on TV, on the news stations, and it's been in the papers, but a lot of people still don't know about it. And you can go to our website, santafesheriff.com, www.santafesheriff.com, and you can sign up for a program that we have where we send out crime alerts to your... You can get the crime alerts either through text messaging, through emails, or you can go to our website and look at our crime alerts. And what you do is you sign up based on where you live. So it asks you to enter your address. And when you enter your address, it goes in our database. And so if we have, say, somebody in a blue pickup truck that's committing burglaries in your neighborhood, we send alerts out to everybody who lives in that neighborhood and maybe a 2 or 5 mile radius. And we're able to get it pinpointed like that. And you'll get the alert, and it'll tell you, we're getting burglaries in your neighborhood, and they're breaking in through back windows, or they're kicking in doors, or they're looking for unlocked cars, or we have a blue pickup truck that we think is committing burglaries in your area. And you get those alerts, and then you can be on the lookout for these things. We also give, traffic alerts, so that if, St. Francis Drive has a major accident, or I-25 or 84-285 has a major accident and the road's closed, we send those alerts out. So it'll help you with traffic incidents. It'll help you with burglary or crime rates. It'll help you with things like even the swine flu. When we had the swine flu scare, we would let people know about the swine flu and tell people to what areas we were getting cases in. So I really would like people to go sign up for that and then start a neighborhood watch. Those are two big things you can do.
Greg Solano is Sheriff of Santa Fe. The website is santafesheriff.com. And the non-emergency number for the Santa Fe Police is...
And the Sheriff's Office.
And the Sheriff's Office is 428-3720. That's 505-428-3720. And, of course, 911 in an emergency.
Yes.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org. We're podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime. Thanks to the wonderful Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and you can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, the Colors of Jazz.